Thank you for downloading this podcast from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. For more original Torah content, visit elmad.pardes.org.
It's an honor and a privilege for us to welcome
Yitzhak Herzog to Pardes, chairman of the executive of the Jewish Agency. I want to just say a few words about the Jewish Agency, first of all, because some of us may not know what is the Jewish Agency. If you've heard of Birthright, if you've heard of Masa, it's helped some of you to get here. If you've heard of absorption centers for New Orleans, that's part of what the Jewish Agency does. It does actually much more, helping at-risk kids here in Israel. Reform, conservative, and modern Orthodox movements educate Israeli kids here in Israel. Shlichim across the world, helping Aliyah. And just 2 days ago, although I wasn't able to be there in my shul, there was a bar and bat mitzvah ceremony for hearing impaired children, which was organized in part by the Jewish Agency. And Yitzhak Herzog made room in his schedule to be there and to speak at that, what I heard was a very moving bar and bat mitzvah ceremony for those kids. Yitzhak Herzog was a member of Knesset from 2003 until he took this position at the Jewish Agency only about a year ago. He was the leader of the opposition in the Knesset. In the 2015 election, he was the front runner for prime minister, and unfortunately, in my humble opinion, he did not succeed in winning that election. But really somebody who has devoted his life not to the practice of law, for which he is eminently qualified and a senior partner at one of the most prestigious firms in Israel, but really devoted his time to Israel and the Jewish people. I actually know Yitzhak Herzog from the time when he was a teenager. He was a student of mine at Ramaz High School in New York City. He was really one of the best students that I taught in history in all of the 12 years that I taught at Ramaz. But I want to say two more things about him, and that reflects on him as a person. Number one is that Yitzhak Herzog has great yichus. Yichus meaning great ancestry. His grandfather, after whom he is named, was the chief rabbi of the State of Israel, someone who really played a major role in the early years of the state, and also in helping the displaced persons and finding Jewish children who had survived the Shoah in Europe in various places, and a great Talmid Chacham. His father was the sixth president of the State of Israel, and it was during his tenure as the ambassador to the United Nations for the State of Israel that Yitzhak studied as my student in Ramaz. And I remember distinctly Yitzhak in shul on Shabbat mornings and on Chag mornings, often reading the Haftarah, often reading from the Megillot. And, you know, one might say it's a ritual, but I know, having taught him in those years, that he had then and he has now a very deep Yiddish neshama, a very deep Jewish soul. Last but not least, when Yitzhak Herzog was a student at Ramaz, about 10% of the student body was Israeli. The children of diplomats, the children of the heads of the banks of Israel were students at Ramaz. And I have to say, I say this with great shame, that those Israeli students were, for the most part, social outcasts. At Ramaz, the American kids paid very, very little attention to them. And I would say even often ignored them. Really, I say this with great pain. Yitzhak Herzog came in 10th grade, a year after almost everybody had come in. A year later, he was already elected vice president of the student organization. Really, it reflects something about his personality, something about his warmth, something about his Yiddish and Neshama that students appreciated.
First of all, David Bernstein was an outstanding teacher of history. At the end, the love of a certain topic in your school years has a lot to do with who teaches you. and him and his wife Ricky were incredible teachers, and he left a huge impact on me, so much so that I even wrote an article, a critique of a historical book in Haaretz, and I quoted my debate with David, because he taught us the sentence, the more things change, the more they stay the same. That was his line. And then we argued, and I argued. I told him it's nonsense, it's this and that. And he argued, and I must say, in hindsight, being in politics and public life, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Absolutely. Anyway, I'm happy to be here. Pardes is an illustrious institution. You have a great name. I'm happy, I'm envious of you, that you can sit and study and lilmod. This is outstanding. And I think it's a great challenge. I won't bore you with too many issues. I think let's put some topics on the table. We are the agents, as we see ourselves, of the Jewish people. Where are we as the Jewish people? I think that the following are the main challenges of the Jewish people of this era. Number one, when I assumed office, I said to everybody, I'm afraid of a split. If you look at it historically, other religions, other nations had a split, God forbid. We are moving into a couple of different directions that require a discussion. The fact that you guys are believers in each one's way of believing, for me, is a great pleasure to see. Because especially here in Israel, you don't see much of that. So first is the fact that what I call Jerusalem and Babylon. There's a great historian, Jewish historian whose name was Shimon Ravidovich. He was from Bandeis. And he wrote an article called Jerusalem and Babylon. And that was after the creation of the State of Israel. And he projected something which, in my mind, makes some sense, at least for a superficial Israeli observation. The two main Jewish communities of the era, 6 million Jews in Jerusalem, as we call it, Eretz Israel, 6 million Jews in North America, are growing disparate. The fact that you're here is another bridge to prevent that. But if you look at it completely honestly, the perception of Jewish life, the perception of the scale of values, a lot of things grow disparate. We say, you know, we send our kids to the army. The North American kids go to college. They don't have to be Jewish. It's not registered anywhere. They can hide their Jewishness. Here it's automatic. It's part of life. It's the culture. So things are growing there. How do we make sure that they are tied together? How do we make sure? This is big, 6 million, 6 million. It's not a small nation anymore, although we need a critical mass to prevent the horrors of the past. That is one big question. The second big question is, what do we do about the diversity of Jewish life, which encompasses everything, okay? It was always like that in terms of from secularism to ultra-orthodoxy. But what about the Jewish streams? What about the discourse between the Jewish streams? I firstly believe, and as I talk to theologians and people of knowledge, at the end, when you delve into the original sources, you can find common denominators amongst all. But people who don't understand and people who don't know and those who want to leverage on it, and especially in an era whereby the extremists in all camps like to clash with each other, just like anywhere in political systems around the world, it risks a real divide. Now, the problem is that in America, I think in a very positive development, there is much more of an interaction, at least I would say in the formal level. Rabbis are meeting together. If you come to an AIPAC conference, you have 1,200 rabbis of all streams and shuls meeting together. And they're not banning each other. They could respect each other. In Israel, they haven't reached the point where they can sit down and talk to each other. They don't. There's a whole cherem on one side, at least an unofficial one. Huge fear from discussing one with the other. Then it explodes to the whole issue of the Kotel, which I was very much involved with historically. I was a minister in 5 different cabinet posts. I was government secretary, and I know it today. Every little issue that somebody, some idiot here says is interpreted wrongly there. anything that somebody says there is interpreted wrongly here. Total lack of knowledge. How do we prevent that? In Shevet Achim Gam Yachad, as done here, I'm sure these things are discussed with dignity. Somewhere out there, there's a lot of fear, misunderstanding, lack of knowledge, which, if you multiply it exponentially to young millennials, who are, you can assume, let's say, 1 million young millennials already in America, North America, who can turn away totally and say, you know, plague on all your houses, leave me alone, I don't want to be Jewish, and I don't give a damn anymore. And the whole issue of interfaith marriage and its impact on Jewish life and Jewish future is something that needs to be discussed in a frank and open manner and understand, are we bringing people in or are we pushing them out? None of this is discussed anywhere seriously. The reason is that people are afraid, they don't have time, they're for superficial or political. You cannot ask the Israeli political system to attend to it seriously. That is why I'm very heavily involved in raising this voice and saying to everybody, "Mi yoda im lo la'et hazot," we have to prevent the rift from growing apart and let's bring people together and have a dialogue. Lilmod echad ma'asheni. Learn from each other. So this, I encompass this challenge, okay, as the challenge of rift slash split slash lack of knowledge, and of course, it raises a lot of halachic questions, clearly. And David mentioned my late illustrious grandfather, Rabbi Yitzchak Isaac Halevi Herzog. For those of you who want to know more, there's a biography that came out just this year, both in English and in Hebrew, by Shaul Meislish, of my grandfather. My grandfather not only rescued Jews, but he was the rabbi who had to deal with the questions of from Holocaust to independence. What does it mean to have a Jewish sovereignty in the land after 2,000 years? He was chief rabbi here from 1937 to 1959. Exactly the most formative years. And he was also a scientist. He had a PhD from the Sorbonne in 13 languages on the dying purple and the blue, the Tchelet, that is now part of the Tzitzit and, of course, the flag of Israel. And he had no problem in talking to everybody, shaking hands with everybody, and respecting everybody. And somewhere we need to make sure that our religion is open enough and accepting enough. And this is part of the big debate in Israeli society as well. Then, of course, there is another issue, is the centrality of Israel. It is connected to the first, but not only. The occurrence of the State of Israel is really the most formative development in Jewish history in thousands of years. Finally, you know, in previous sovereignties, it was less than 70 years at times. We had twice 70 years. There's a big question in Israel, whereas are we, now when we are 70, what does it mean to Jewish independence? You look around, this is a thriving, impressive nation. And yet, like every society, has its own internal viruses that endanger it. Sinat chinam, number one. Okay? Hating the other for no real reason. Can respect amidst differences. This is a big issue. People care a lot about this nation, and because of that, sometimes they lose their sense of responsibility and understanding that we live in a very complex region, especially as you bear in mind that the center of so many religions is in this city. So you have to respect the belief of the other, honor him, and keep on building your nation in a proud manner. So the question is, how deep is Israel instilled in the hearts and minds of people? I don't know your each and everyone's life experiences here, but what brought you to Israel? What led you? Was it something you knew from childhood, or it occurred all of a sudden? Big questions. And then, of course, what does it mean as respect to the alternative that is produced in the diaspora? There are centers of learning that are extremely impressive not in Israel, in the diaspora, and could they serve as an alternative in future generations, and how does Israel serve as a beacon to Jews all over the world? Big dilemma, especially in light of a political system that is extremely, extremely heated, and you've just gone through an election process here. Thirdly, of course, anti-Semitism. Always there, lurking up and down. This era is the worst since World War II, undoubtedly. In America, for example, first time in the history of American Jewry that people are murdered from being Jewish is this year. Think about it, this year. Never before. You always study about all sorts of, God forbid, all sorts of massacres from Limerick to Kishinev. And in some of these instances, these massacres were almost like the 11 people in Pittsburgh. So the question is, why now? Why here? What era do we live in that is so tishvi, that we are so violent, and why? What happens to humans' behavior that influences our life so deeply, or people's lives, to take on a weapon after they, a student, 19-year-old, studying nursing, something that should be extremely compassionate, takes a gun, goes to a shul, and murders a woman who comes for Yizkor. So these are questions that are we indifferent to it or not? Every day there's another attack. 2 days ago in Chicago in synagogues. Last week in Sweden. In swastikas in Cornell. BDS in Brown, resolution against banning Israel. It's not something you can be indifferent to. It requires understanding where is the humanity heading to, and has there been an unleashing of some genie that influences human life. I will stop here, because I think these are the three main questions that we are there for. And I open the floor for comments, questions, anything you want to ask. Israeli politics, whatever, it's your time. Thank you very much. Please, first one, and don't be shy. Yes, say your name, where you're from. So, first of all, there was only one instance here that also came public, or two. If you have more, I'd be happy to know. I made a specific internal inquiry about these cases, because we are the ones interviewing. The Jewish Agency is the one interviewing. From North America, the Aliyah is carried out by Nefesh B'Nefesh, but the interviewing and the files are managed by the Jewish Agency. Totally unacceptable, should never be, shouldn't have been there. It came from, we supply the files to the Ministry of Interior. There is a new law that prevents or enables the Minister of Interior to prevent incoming BDS activists. They were afraid that there were people who are coming as BDS activists in disguise, meaning saying we're making Aliyah, but actually they're here to carry out BDS activism. Nothing to do with political opinions that object to the occupation. That's a legitimate opinion. You can argue about it or not argue about it, but there's no. I mean, we cannot. This is outrageous to check people's views. They can range from the extreme right to the extreme left, so long as they want to make Aliyah and realize their Jewish identity here in Medinat Israel. We are only happy about it. So thanks, and if there is a case that I don't know about, I'll talk to you. I want to write the name. I want to check the file. Okay? Thanks. Please.
My name is Jason from St. Louis.
From St. Louis. I just got back from St. Louis. Great community. Beautiful community. And I lectured at Wash U.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Tony.
Yeah. Tony, are you like? Okay.
About the North, specifically the United States,
or Canadian diaspora. Someone said once that they think of the American diaspora like American Jews think of French Jews. Like they're sort of there.
Lack of knowledge of what Quebec is all about, right?
Right, and also when I think the main dividing political problem or question that divides the diaspora and the Israeli population.
Well, it was touched upon before. There are issues that loom over the public discourse that people are do not understand their complexity. Take the issue that was raised here about the borders of the State of Israel, the Palestinian Israeli conflict. Okay, so last May, 50,000 Palestinians from Gaza rushed into the border with Israel with knives, hatchets, and hand grenades in order to break into the border, reach the kibbutzim and moshevim on the border, and basically endanger human beings, if not to butcher them. So there were Israeli soldiers, after warning and warning and warning and tear gas, had to shoot. Many young Jews around the world said, "You're shooting innocent." I know that my children who are there operated exactly like any sane nation would operate. This is the difference. The perception of the conflict as one major item. Israel is viewed in polls as clerical, as right-wing, as fascist. It's all nonsense. The nation is varied. The nation is debating. There's all societies around the world are in the same status. Look at America first before you blame us. Okay, look where America is going. You have behavioral modes of human beings and debates and arguments and a variety of opinions that sometimes overlaps on issues. 90% of the people here would settle for a major peace agreement if there was a partner out there who would be willing to be as bold as Anwar Sadat or King Hussein, for that matter. But they feel at unease. They feel unsafe. We withdrew from territory, we got terror. This is a question that looms over everybody's minds. On the other hand, you don't want to control the lives of millions of Palestinians, nor do you, at least in my perception, you want to give hope to the other nation. That's where the dilemma is. And you deal with it day in, day out, because there are all variety of issues. Now, go explain it to somebody out there who's hearing only one side of the equation, who's brainwashed on the other side, or just doesn't want to hear or listen, or doesn't even know. Same goes for other questions. When the New York Times depicts a certain vision or angle of Israel, doesn't mean it's the true Israel. But liberal Jews are reading it and becoming despaired, as if everything here is lost. It's not true. People who live here know it's not true. They know it's not true. Netanyahu won the elections not because he personally won, because he had exactly the same number of mandates like Benny Gantz. At the end, he has a right-wing religious coalition with him that gives him the majority. Do they agree with him on everything? No. Do they overlap sometimes with the center-left? Yes. There are issues all the time that come up in the public discourse. Because the dividing line was always the conflict with the Palestinians, the whole image of Israel has been distorted. And the story of the incredible forces and people who are here and the unique challenges and is not fairly told. Now, this looms again on the discourse within the Jewish world. Immediately, Michael Shabon, a theologian and a writer who appeared at Hebrew Union College, says, this is not the Jewish life, this is not Israel. First, because he brought the issue of Hebron as an example. The issue of Hebron is a very, very complicated issue, but this is the exception to the rule. Namely, the zealots out there are the exception to the rule. And there are Jewish zealots throughout history, as there are American zealots throughout history. That's the problem. There are zealots in the world. You have to contain the zealots enough and make sure that the silent majority runs the nation. That's why I always believed in national unity governments in Israel. Always thought the two major Zionist movements should go together. And unfortunately, because of the current political circumstances, it's not feasible at this stage. Please. Yes. Yeah, sure. Your name? Well, first of all, I love that definition, because that's exactly it. It's very, by the way, very Jewish. Oy vey, oy vey zmir. But let's look also on the positive side. First of all, we are one big family. Secondly, look at it. You have tens of thousands of young Jews who come into Israel every year, from Masa, Taglit, onward, you name it, all the others. The Jewish Agency is involved in all of it. Thirdly, you have thousands of young Israelis who are being out there in communities abroad, including our Shinshinim, our gap year kids who serve in the communities and are coming back as ambassadors of the diaspora with all its variety and pluralism, including Shlichim, including 1,400 counselors that we send to summer camps in America only. Worldwide, we send more. Covering 120,000 kids. Okay? Israel experiences of kinds on both sides of the ocean. Twinning schools that we do. Projects between schools. Visiting of high schools. Grandparents and grandchildren program in partnerships. We have 45 partnerships between Israeli towns and cities and villages and Jewish communities abroad. I just met Montreal. They adopted Be'er Sheva. But the other day, yesterday I met Chicago, they adopted Kiryat Gat. And it goes each way. I mean, it's amazing how the communal life and the interchange between the two communities everywhere is really impressive. And I would say more than that. I think that the issue is to influence opinion makers. So we, the Jewish Agency, are sending most of the members of the Knesset to visit communities and synagogues of all denominations throughout North America or the rest of the world by that. We have a huge caucus in the Knesset. And it made a huge difference. And our people, take Bezalel Smotrich, okay, the pillar of the right now. He went on a mission, got back and said, these are my brothers and sisters, and he speaks differently. Aryeh Deri, the Minister of Interior, went up in the cabinet and said, "Em achim v'achayot sheli." He's just afraid to say it in his community. I told him, "Ata lo yada klum. You don't know nothing. You just blame them by saying things that you learn. You want to have a vikuach on what it is, who is it, who's a Jew? Fine, but first of all, don't bash your brothers and sisters." And I go to all opinion makers in Israel, all rabbis, and tell them that. I also go to American communities in North America, Canada, and others, and tell them, learn before you speak about Israel. Because Israel is ever-changing, interesting, open, and attractive. Before you blame things, learn. Tilmedu, there's a huge variety of your multiculturalism in this country. This city alone, you can notice it everywhere. Unfortunately, you can notice it in hospitals. But I'm saying it seriously. You see how varied the communities are. Please. Yes. And your name is?
I'm Josh.
From where?
Michigan. One of the things that I knew the least about is realism is surprising, mostly controversial. It's realist just in the sense that I can, you know, walk down the street and interact with someone whose ancestors from Ethiopia, India, Iran, France. But I don't think that's something that's really well understood.
This is the story. My mother was born in Egypt. My father was born in Northern Ireland, from Belfast. This is the mixture of Israel, and it's true. We are an immigrant society, and it's quite similar to the United States when you think about it. So we have over 100 aliyot here. This year only 30,000 Jews from about 40 countries came. We bring Jews from the heart of Iran all the way down to North America. So this is really a challenge. It is a challenge to tell the story. Usually the media is very superficial. So you can do it with the positive, you know, the high tech, the tikkun olam that we do, things of this nature, the Eurovision, which was a huge success, something that most Americans don't know much about, was a big event, really big event, because it showed a different side of Israel. But usually you know how it is. People tend to the extreme. Tend to the extreme. It's like calling somebody in San Diego during the day of the shooting and thinking they're all in curfew. The lens is very, very narrow at times. So yes, this is exactly the experience that I'm trying to deliver, and we are doing it through our shlichim. They're bringing their parents, or shinshinim. They're telling the story of their lives, of their parents to their hosting families, bonding and connecting and getting each other to know each other. Please. Yes.
Yeah. My name is Sarah. I'm originally from New Jersey. I'm just wondering, since this is the Jewish state, not just the Israeli state, how much of a say, or any say, do you think Jews from the diaspora should have in what goes on?
So this is the nation state of the Jewish people. This is the right definition. I believe the diaspora should have a say. I also believe that some of the old equations, you know, the diaspora gives money and, you know, and we are the poor ones, is over. I think the state of Israel needs to attend a lot, and it does, by the way. In the last decade, major change. It finances a lot of these projects in order to help the communities and preserve Jewish continuity. I think that it should have a say. Never they found a solution. Not to vote, but have some other opinion, all sorts of things. There has to be a mechanism. There's a book called God is in the Crowd, which came out this year by a guy called Tal Kainan, and he's a former Israeli Air Force pilot who made Aliyah from America and now is in high tech in America. And he writes about, you know, let's find a way that the Jewish people are present in the public debate in Israel. And I think it's a very valid point. Also, Natan Sharansky, my predecessor, often. But look, if the Israeli political system, you have to drag it into it. Rather, usually it prioritizes on what's the immediate and never attends to the long term. Yes, somebody was here. Yes, please. No, there was one event that I don't think for privacy matters that we can really discuss here.
Right. I'm just curious about, like, how you deal with that tension between, like, people who want to stay,
but then also not being allowed to. You pinpointed exactly on the problem. There is no similarity to our state anywhere in the world because we are a nation state of a religion. Extremely complex. And again, you know, there's an elaborate school of thought of the Supreme Court believing in equality and trying to find the equilibrium between Jewish and democratic. This is actually the crux of the debate in Israel right now. Because in America it would be Justice Kavanaugh, yes or no. In Israel it's exactly, do we legislate an overriding paragraph that will enable the parliament to override on the imbalance, as they feel, between Jewish and democratic in the judgment of the Supreme Court. But the Supreme Court tried to find a way whereby they can honor the equality of all and the uniqueness of the Jewish state. That is why, for example, we, the Jewish agency, we are the ones recommending Aliyah according to the law of return for a recognized Jewish community, which can be any stream. Then we recommend it to the Ministry of Interior, and they, and by the judgment, they adopt it. But it doesn't mean that we check whether somebody is halachically Jewish, because maybe your grandparent was Jewish. And therefore, that creates a certain tension, which leads to cases whereby people or those who want to make aliyah and they were not Jews, were not born Jewish, what does it mean that their conversion abroad? These are questions that we deal with on a daily basis. And the Minister of Interior right now is ultra-Orthodox and he's very conservative. There were other ministers who were more open to more solutions. But there's always a tension here. Always. We are voicing our opinions opinions wherever we can. Please.
If I can just say on that point that the Jewish Agency is being very helpful in one particular case with a Pardes alumnus who is having some trouble about this issue. And I wanted to say that I received a personal phone call from Yitzchak from California about this particular case. So this is a case where the question was a very good question in general, but specifically in terms of this Pardes alum, Yitzchak and the Jewish Agency staff are really, really working hard and have made some progress and hopefully.
Hi, Jonah from Rockville, Maryland. Is there anything you could possibly get like a more talkless description of what the interaction is like between the Soviet and the Israeli government? Like maybe in this particular case, or
So look, by law, which was enacted by David Ben-Gurion in light of a dialogue he had with leaders of the American Jewish community in the 1950s, the Jewish Agency enjoys a special preference within its dialogue with the government as pertains to the needs of the Jewish people. So we have many contracts with the government. For example, Massah is a 50-50 contract with the government. They put $25 million, we put $25 million, which we raise with the federations. So we have a multitude of projects. With the government, diaspora affairs, we do now, you know, headhunting for Jewish educators all over the world and placement of Jewish educators, or helping with twinning schools and things like that. Same goes with the Ministry of Interior. We are the ones processing Aliyah. They are the ones who are giving the permit to enter, like in America, Immigration and Naturalization Service. We prepare the files. We interview the people. We prepare them to learn Hebrew and what they're up to. Then they come here. They have to go through. The law says exactly people with mental problems, people with past illegal record, and of course, checking their Jewish background. Please.
Last question.
We'll take the last two questions. Okay. It's okay. Give you a bonus.
For the Israeli state, why is it so? What is the block to lifting the siege of Gaza? If that could, if the siege of Gaza is one of the main goals of the protests in Gaza, what is the major block to lifting the siege and creating that room for long-term ceasefire with Hamas? Because the state has a relationship somewhat with Turkey, which is ideologically so close to Hamas. Surely, like lifting that siege, I feel like it lifts so much of the suffering and really create long-term peace in Gaza for people.
So the problem is, first of all, you know, we uprooted all our brothers and sisters in Gaza in 2005, and we went back to the last inch of the border, and we gave it to the Palestinians, and Arafat came in and went into Gaza, and his people later on, and then there was a brutal coup in 2006, and Hamas took the place over, and it became a launching pad of missiles. You know, we have about 10,000 missiles on our heads since then. And the issue is that all they want to do is to smuggle weapons and ammunition constantly to Gaza. Every time we lift the siege, ammunition is produced by all sorts of means. Chemicals, you can find it in the web also. You supply metals for water pipes, they use it for cannons. It became extremely frustrating because all their aim is to annihilate Israel. They're an arm of the Iranian government. Now, there is a major war going on in the region. You have to understand it. It's not a little battle with Gaza. The last thing Israelis want is Gazans to suffer. And every time we do something, we uplift. Like yesterday, we uplifted the fishing area. But then, of course, they shoot, they fire, they kill. And it goes back. All the time, again and again. It's a huge tragedy. The Palestinian Authority is not willing to go in forcefully and conquer it back. They want us to do it for them. The Egyptians are extremely weary of the Hamas behavior. And the real war going on is two empires. You've got Iran as an ancient empire who has ambitions to conquer the region. So they have Syria with them because they've helped Assad. They have Hezbollah with them, which is the most heavily armored army in the region. You've got Hamas from the south. So they want like a fork to hit on Israel. This is the war. That's why we attack in Syria all the time, to make sure that they don't get ammunition that gives them a certain qualitative edge. Same goes for Gaza. You cannot allow them to smuggle products in that give them a qualitative edge. They're in the heart of our country. And that is why, as we want to give more leeway, they are always punishing themselves by going for terror rather than changing the whole equation, saying, okay, laying our arms, now let's talk. And it has to do with an internal political debate within the Palestinian world, whether Hamas or Fatah. The other coalition, the other empire, is all the Sunni states. Iran is Shia. Speaking of a split amongst religion, okay, that's what I've been talking about. There, 1,000 years ago, the Islamic religion split. The Shia and the Sunni, they hate themselves more than you can ever imagine. That's why the Sunni states, which were always our enemies, Egypt, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, Emirates, Kuwait, Bahrain, they all became our buddy buddies. They see us as their ally in saving themselves from the Shia occupation. This is the war that's going on in the region. That's why you have Iran in the Gulf. That's why you have the threats of the Iranians on Qatar and Bahrain. That's why America is out there. It's much bigger than just simply looking at the gates of Gaza. Guys, I hope, I promised you last question. True. Okay, so we are initiating many new projects. We also going a lot on the study of Hebrew. In my mind, modern day and age, online, of course. We've not now launching with the government, for example, a project of Tikkun Olam, whereby we will take young Jews from the diaspora in Israel and Israeli citizens to serve in third world countries. We already have something called Project 10. So on that platform, create a Jewish Peace Corps, including serving in the regular communities around the world, but in for the well-being of society as such. So you give a sense of purpose to an unaffiliated Jew who says, okay, you know what, I'll just help the community at large. We are launching, I'm leading a major change in the organization through a major laboratory process of dialogue with all our partners to see what are the main challenges of the Jewish people and how do we tackle them. We have a voice in Israeli society. We have 40 pre-army programs, mechinot. We have 5 youth villages. We have a mentoring program for the needy and underprivileged in Israel so that we can include the diaspora Jewry in the whole social scene in Israel, including Jews and non-Jews. So we are very heavily involved. We're dealing with building a coalition against anti-Semitism, a very big one, working with all the major Jewish players. So that to all of you, and have a great learning.
Yitzhak, thank you very much.
Do it so that looks like a selfie. Yeah. We used to call him Bernie.
My wife still does. Yitzhak, I just want to thank you. We have a small gift for you, and actually, it's actually reciprocating because, as some people in this room know, the Jewish Agency was actually critical in the founding of Pardes. And supported Pardes for many, many years. And so this is a very small token of appreciation to you personally and to the Jewish Agency as a whole. So thank you very much.
Thank you for downloading this podcast from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. For more original Torah content, visit almad.pardes.org.